So, welcome back. It's always hard in the late afternoon slot, particularly on a Saturday afternoon, so I'm pleased to see that just about everybody has come back. That's really great. A couple of matters. I'd like to extend a welcome to the Honourable Judith Tizard, who's joined us now here, so thank you for coming. And also to thank Richard Naylor, who's been a silent and continuous web stream involver, whatever the word for that is, web stream creator. The session now is, of course, to report back on our group sessions. Obviously, we won't get every point that every group got. I hope that each group has someone prepared to speak that possibly might be the leader of the group, but not necessarily. So first, I'd just like to invite someone from the government group to get things started. I'll keep you company. Yeah, actually, you should mic.
The government group had a really solid discussion around a number of issues, and the kind of the one that got the most comments was the integrity of the content and its use came up fairly well with a number of comments on just how do we know that the content that's out there under a Creative Commons license has got any integrity. And a number of people wanted to know, well, who's using it? I could say, well, you don't actually know that under current licensing, but that's not the issue we were discussing. There was also, perhaps the largest group, were the lack of knowledge of what Creative Commons licensing is, but also there was a lack of knowledge of Crown copyright and copyright in general. So we're not doing a very good job of actually explaining what copyright is all about. There was also a lack of understanding of the ownership. Who owns the copyright? And one of the barriers that was seen would be the lack of legal precedent currently to anything that was released with a Creative Commons license. There were also some queries around technology compliance. If you were publishing only in the digital arena, how do you know that people can actually access your technology? Is your technology neutral in terms of government web standards or any other standards? And can everybody who needs to access it, can people with disability issues actually access it? How compliant is your technology? Also, there's currently no government policy framework about the use of a Creative Commons license, or at least not that the group knew about. Generally speaking, Kiwis are a bit risk averse, so risk aversion came up. And the no advantage one was seen was, what key thing would draw somebody into using a Creative Commons license, particularly if you're, say, a scientific researcher publishing to get a citation index ranking so that you can get your next research grant that you apply for. There's no advantage at all in using a Creative Commons license. And we had lots of other discussion around all sorts of things too.
Creative.
Hello. Well, we were actually both the creative and the commercial group. So in terms of the question of what was preventing us using Creative Commons licensing, these were sort of like the broad themes that came out. There was things around which license complex sites and whose rights, economic benefits and royalties, the sort of whole legal framework, was it enforcement of it versus too restrictive, a lack of public understanding, and then some other things around implementation, loss of identity and access. But I'll just go through some of the key points of each of these. So in terms of the which license, you know, which is the most appropriate license? Who takes the license? The creator, the aggregator, or the contributor? is the site the license holder or each individual object? And what we were trying to get to there is an out-of-copyright object when digitized. Is that a new object? Is that a new piece of content? What happens with a mix of in-copyright and public domain material? And which license applies when the aggregator site contributes it to another aggregator site? Around the economic benefits, this was mainly had about three or four things. Repurposing content to make a living was a big thing. But the loss of income if someone else repurposes your own content. The loss of income from derivatives of derivatives. The terms of license and in which jurisdiction. And then the whole legal framework. And the threads that were coming through here were around ensuring compliance, guarding against potential misuse, concern that lack of understanding might lead to the wrong license being selected, the misuse because of lack of understanding, is it too restrictive a framework, and the uncertainty of Creative Commons status compared to copyright other rights, which is similar to what Beryl was talking about before, what legislation has precedence, I suppose. And then there are things around prestige, identity, trust, the loss of individual moral rights and institutional, reputational rights, that whole public trust thing if the material is misused in some shape or form, and maintaining the integrity of the material again. And then some generalist things around implementation, the unclear definition of non-commercial, the incompatibility with other open content licenses, the lack of understanding about how to attach a license. And that's all.
Notes. Very creative. Education.
I warned the group that I'm representing, as I warn everyone here, as I'm not a very good facilitator. I find it hard to remain neutral, and therefore I'll impose my opinions every step of the way. The best we could, we try to break it down into three key areas. Not that you need to focus on this, because I'm going to speak to them all. This is for my prompts. We identified the issues relating to, obviously, in education resource production. I think education would benefit from a stop and think to look at the music industry, particularly the sampling music industry, 1970s onwards, and probably learn a lot from some of the DIY stuff that's coming out of there in terms of what they do in practice. So Creative Commons obviously opens a huge window of opportunity as far as sampling existing materials go that we can recollate and present as new educational materials. Before we can get there, though, we have to undo a lot of cultural practice in our organisation, teacher being fount of all knowledge type thing, and using legacy materials that sometimes are up to 20 or 30 years old. But then when we do get into a culture of successfully resampling materials dynamically and on the fly, then we get into some pretty serious issues with third-party property rights. Already we've been struck. There are examples in education of being struck by using what they think is a Creative Commons resource, but it turns out that the third party wasn't cleared and that they're publishing that. At the moment, education, as far as online education, has protection in a practice of closed learning management systems, content management systems, a username and password. A lot of progressives in education wish to undo that and bring about open education opportunities, but the problems with third party clearance and the whole copyright fear factor prevents a lot of people from taking that step. So unfortunately, that copyright fear keeps us in those closed environments a lot of the way. That's probably the last barrier to come across, to get over before we get out of that way and we bring back open education. To do with resources and access, where do we locate our resources? Some discussion has had about the old hosting problem or hosting decision. Do we host our resources locally? And our servers no doubt will go down because we can't pay the IT staff enough to stay with us and all of that. Or do we use the likes of YouTube, MySpace, and heavens forbid Facebook? Or do we or do we use Wikipedia? Do we use Wikimedia Commons? Can we rely on that resource to be there? Or archive.org, or can we use both? Unfortunately, I haven't encountered that discussion happening anywhere outside my office door. So, desired improvements, New Zealand options. Suggestions. Beginning to a possible debate about is there a need for a New Zealand fair use clause? Some people suggested that as a possibility to solve a lot of issues about whether or not a teacher can use that resource or not. Some people thought that we should do away with the distinction between teacher and everything else. Communication in and awareness. We have obviously heavily hierarchical systems. We've got managers that I never meet, and we've got teachers and assistants that I never meet. So there's this huge spectrum of people in the organisation, a massive institution that has no human face to it, really. And we need to, the things that we're talking about here, somehow need to inform the people who ultimately write the policy that control all the behaviour underneath it. It's an obvious problem. This one suggestion was that the lights of the digital content strategy are doing a reasonable job in communicating. I think they could do better. And especially accessing the policy writers and informing them properly of the pros and cons so that they can make an informed decision next time they write their IP policy. The government, I think, suggested the idea that research and Creative Commons cannot match. I think, is that a way to put it? Or that, okay. So that relates to, in New Zealand, we have the Performance-Based Research Fund, an incentive to boost research in the organisation. One suggestion is that we need to open the debate, as far as I'm aware the debate's not being had yet, on the criteria in which we measure performance, high-performance research. There was a term used in our group called grey research, the likes of investigative journalism and stuff like that, and the impact that is having on what we might imagine the brief to be about research in New Zealand society and how many people are engaging in the types of outputs we have. If we're only going to measure the performance of the research on peer-reviewed journals and international conferences that average New Zealanders don't have much contact with and probably the wider community, for better or for worse, then maybe the PBRF measurements need updating to improve the opportunities for the uptake of open communications, copyright licenses with the Creative Commons and stuff. Tertiary reforms. My memory's blank. Can anybody jog me? Oh, thank you. Yeah.
A network provision, and so there's likely to be more incentive for collaboration rather than competition over time.
Yeah, just for the record on the microphone, that was the tertiary reforms regionalising and network provisions being shared, so that would hopefully encourage collaboration. But in saying that, on the ground, we need to change a fair bit of culture before that's going to happen. Unfortunately, which is strange to say. Okay, IP policy. Everyone needs to adopt the Otago Polytech's IP policy and we'll be sweet. Research learning resources. Unfortunately, it's not. It's the only paper version that exists in the world, in this world here, is with Katarina's hands. We'll hopefully get some. I tried to get the online version. It's apparently on our website, but our website's an absolute dog of a thing. I can't search it. It's on there somewhere. And Google couldn't even find it for me. But anyway, hopefully when it is on there, I'll be able to shout more loudly into the Creative Commons New Zealand and they'll be able to celebrate that aspect of it. And more importantly, I hope to get it into a wiki where we can get it. You know, we don't have lawyers in our organisation, so we need it to be bomb-proof in the objectives that we're trying to go to. So some input on that would be much appreciated. Research learning resources. I need another jog on the memory here. Ownership. Who owns the research and learning resources that are produced? Sorry, I can't speak to that. Okay, great. And institutional competition. Yeah, speaks to the project of the tertiary reforms. You know, there's a progressive sentiment in New Zealand that we need to get collaboration going on, but there's a conservative aspect in New Zealand. I can speak from an Australian point of view coming in here only recently. There is a conservative aspect in New Zealand which needs to be addressed before we can get this this collaboration that will undo this very counterproductive in cross-institutional competitiveness. Australia's no much better anyway, but...
Okay. So the concept that Australians know better is an interesting point for me to report back on Indigenous rights. I think I'm supposed to be employed by the quasi-government in a creative educational process, but I failed to understand the method of note-taking, which was clear and obvious to everybody that you ought to be able to read what was written. So I'm going to utilise this small pad for my own benefit and to feel prepared to look. We had a discussion coming from a number of perspectives within the Indigenous group, starting with, well, would a development of an Indigenous Creative Commons licence be useful or not? And we focused a lot of the discussion around those points, deviating out and in nice circles as we went. We had views, including some very useful contributions from holders of traditional knowledge in New Zealand, such as Te Papa, and views from some of the Maori people who are here today also. We talked about the fact that this would be a world's first Creative Commons Indigenous license, so we really were issue searching. Would it be useful? On the would it be useful side, I think that we came to quite a common agreement that one of the functions of having an Indigenous license would be a knowledge dissemination factor. So, for example, you can only license something that you actually have some kind of right to. And within the Indigenous context, this is of course hard because there is quite a debate as yet unresolved in New Zealand, unresolved internationally, about what sort of intellectual property style protection should go with Indigenous knowledge, traditional knowledge and so on. But we thought that where taonga and knowledge was incorporated in particular in new works, in a catalogue, in a publication that triggers the modern copyright system, that might be an interesting point to explore what could an Indigenous Creative Commons license do. And it might be that at that point it would be very useful to have a range of licenses that were potentially available to indicate issues which a copyright owner could control but weren't pure copyright issues, such as appropriate uses of works, appropriate kinds of attribution, and so on and so forth. We recognise that things might still need to be done on a case-by-case basis. Therefore, a range of licences might be useful. It might be that in some cases the function of those licences would be to get issues going, and it might be that in individual cases different licences would have to be created. In this particular group we really were trying to issues search because it's much sort of further along or further behind, I'm trying to avoid that word, than some of the issues that are raised here where copyright is clearly a player. We talked about, I think, how issues of community ownership could be dealt with, that being a bigger problem or a bigger question within the traditional knowledge, traditional rights debate, but that perhaps Creative Commons licences with their attribution flexibilities might have something to offer there. In particular, the people in our group whose job is involving rights management liked the idea that Creative Commons licences might provide a useful tool to support the work they already do in discussing with iwi, with whanau, with hapu, the use of Māori culture and Māori works. I asked the question, as to whether there was a downside to putting the knowledge out there. It's of course an anathema to educators, to librarians and so far to say that you shouldn't spread knowledge, but I ask the question, would there be a danger that in having an Indigenous Creative Commons licence that could be a bad thing because it would perhaps have too much knowledge about attribution and so on? Generally people thought no, so I think that's a good result. We talked about whether standardisation in the context of an Indigenous licence was useful. I've touched on some of those points, but we did think that it was the flexibility of attribution that meant standardisation might be an overstatement. So you could have iwi attribution, multiple iwi attribution, individual attribution, institutional attribution, and so on. Again, we came back and talked about the educational benefits. The idea that a license could indicate that what you do want is consultation, you don't want to prevent use, and then it might be difficult. We were under no illusions as a group that creating these licenses didn't involve a whole suite of unresolved problems, but we really thought that maybe the licenses might help to articulate some of those problems, even if it didn't necessarily solve them. Someone asked whether an Indigenous license would be by Indigenous people for Indigenous people only. Would it only deal with Indigenous works? Important questions. Who are you protecting? What are you trying to protect? Also not easy to answer. The acknowledgement that the license would have to be different for different medium. We've touched on this all day. A photograph raises different issues than a written work, a film, different issues and so on. The general concept that if you could use a Creative Commons license attached perhaps to a copyright work to ask about consultation of appropriate uses, then people are more happy to share. We thought that overall, although there would be difficulty in finalising the legal detail of such licences, they could potentially, in the Indigenous licence context, be a useful tool for going forward. And last but not least, we thought they'd have to be in both languages, and people were very good-humoured about which language would prevail. I welcome anyone from my group to add to that list. No? Okay. Thank you.